Chapter 27. The return home. While that parting in the wood was happening, there was a parting in the cottage too, and Lisbeth had stood with Adam at the door, straining her aged eyes to get the last glimpse of Seth and Dinah as they mounted the opposite slope. "Eh, I'm loath to see the last on her," she said to Adam, as they turned into the house again. "D-hobbin' willin' tee-haw her about me till I died and went to lie by my old man. She'd make it easier dyin', she spakes so gentle, and moves about so still. I could be fast sure that picter was drawed for her eyes. I knew Bible th angel a sittin' on the big stone by the grave. Eh, I wouldn't a mind havin' a daughter like that. But nobody never marries them as is good for aught. Well, mother, I hope thee wilt have her for a daughter. For Seth's got a liking for her, and I hope she'll get a liking for Seth in time. Where's THUZO talking a thatin? She cares not for Seth. She's going away 20 mile off. How's she to get a liking for him, I'd like to know. No more nor the cake'll come without the leaven. Thy figurin' books might ha told thee better nor that, I should think, else thee might'st as well read the common print, as Seth the lays does. Nay, mother, said Adam, laughing, the figures tell us a fine deal, and we couldn't go far without them, but they don't tell us about folks' feelings. It's a nicer job to calculate them. But Seth's as good-hearted a lad as ever handled a tool, and plenty o' sense, and good-looking too, and he's got the same way o' thinking as Dinah. He deserves to win her, though there's no denying she's a rare bit o' workmanship. You don't see such women turned off the wheel every day. Eh, thee the lay stick up for thy brother. Thee's been just the same, ever since he wore little uns together. Thee wore the lays for having everything why him. But what's Seth got to do with marrying, as is on 23? He'd more need to learn than lay by sixpence. And as for his deserving her, she's 2 year older nor Seth. She's pretty near as old as thee. But that's the way, folks mun the lays choose by contraries, as if they must be sorted like the pork a bit o' good meat why a bit o' awful. To the feminine mind in some of its moods, all things that might be receive a temporary charm from comparison with what is, and since Adam did not want to marry Dinah himself, Lisbeth felt rather peevish on that score, as peevish as she would have been if he had wanted to marry her, and so shut himself out from Mary Birch, and the partnership as effectually as by marrying Eddie. It was more than 8:30 when Adam and his mother were talking in this way, so that when, about 10 minutes later, Eddie reached the turning of the lane that led to the farmyard gate, she saw Dinah and Seth approaching it from the opposite direction, and waited for them to come up to her. They too, like Eddie, had lingered a little in their walk, for Dinah was trying to speak words of comfort and strength to Seth in these parting moments. But when they saw Eddie, they paused and shook hands. Seth turned homewards, and Dinah came on alone. "Seth Bede would have come, and spoken to you, my dear," she said, as she reached Eddie, "but he's very full of trouble tonight." Eddie answered with a dimpled smile, as if she did not quite know what had been said. And it made a strange contrast, to see that sparkling self-engrossed loveliness looked at by Dinah's calm pitying face, with its open glance which told that her heart lived in no cherished secrets of its own, but in feelings which it longed to share with all the world. Eddie liked Dinah as well as he had ever liked any woman. How was it possible to feel otherwise towards one who always put in a kind word for her, when her aunt was finding fault, and who was always ready to take Toddy off her aunt's little tiresome Toddy, that was made such a pet of by everyone, and that Eddie could see no interest in at all? Dinah had never said anything disapproving or reproachful to Eddie during her whole visit to the Hall Farm. He had talked to her a great deal in a serious way, but Eddie didn't mind that much, for she never listened. Whatever Dinah might say, she almost always stroked Eddie's cheek after it, and wanted to do some mending for her. Dinah was a riddle to her. Eddie looked at her much in the same way as one might imagine a little perching bird, that could only flutter from bough to bough, to look at the swoop of the swallow, or the mounting of the lark. but she did not care to solve such riddles, any more than she cared to know what was meant by the pictures in the Pilgrim's Progress, or in the old folio Bible that Marty and Tommy always plagued her about on a Sunday. Dinah took her hand now, and drew it under her own arm. "You look very happy tonight, dear child," she said. "She'll think of you often when I'm at Snowfield, and see your face before me as it is now. It's a strange thing sometimes when I'm quite alone, sitting in my room with my eyes closed, or walking over the hills, the people I've seen and known, if it's only been for a few days, are brought before me, and I hear their voices, and see them look and move almost plainer than I ever did, when they were really with me so as I could touch them. And then my heart is drawn out towards them, and I feel their lot, as if it was my own, and I take comfort in spreading it before the Lord and resting in His love, on their behalf as well as my own. And so I feel sure you will come before me." She paused a moment, but Teddy said nothing. "It has been a very precious time to me," Dinah went on, "last night and today seeing two such good sons as Adam and Seth Bede. They are so tender, and thoughtful for their aged mother. And she has been telling me what Adam has done, for these many years, to help his father and his brother. It's wonderful what a spirit of wisdom and knowledge he has, and how he's ready to use it all in behalf of them that are feeble. And I'm sure he has a loving spirit too. I've noticed it often among my own people round Snowfield, that the strong, skillful men are often the gentlest to the women and children. And it's pretty to see 'em carrying the little babies, as if they were no heavier than little birds. And the babies always seem to like the strong arm best. I feel sure it would be so with Adam Bede. Don't you think so, Teddy?" "Yes," said Teddy abstractedly, for her mind had been all the while in the wood, and she would have found it difficult to say what she was assenting to. Dinah saw she was not inclined to talk, but there would not have been time to say much more, for they were now at the yard gate. The still twilight, with its dying western red, and its few faint struggling stars, rested on the farmyard, where there was not a sound to be heard, but the stamping of the cart horses in the stable. It was about 20 minutes after sunset. The fowls were all gone to roost, and the bulldog lay stretched on the straw outside his kennel, with the black and tan terrier by his side, when the falling to of the gate disturbed them and set them barking, like good officials, before they had any distinct knowledge of the reason. The barking had its effect in the house, for, as Dinah and Teddy approached, the doorway was filled by a portly figure, with a ruddy black-eyed face which bore, in it the possibility of looking extremely acute, and occasionally contemptuous, on market days, but had now a predominant after-supper expression of hearty good nature. It is well known that great scholars who have shown the most pitiless acerbity in their criticism of other men's scholarship have yet been of a relenting and indulgent temper in private life. And I have heard of a learned man meekly rocking the twins in the cradle with his left hand, while with his right he inflicted the most lacerating sarcasms on an opponent who had betrayed a brutal ignorance of Hebrew. Weaknesses and errors must be forgiven, alas. They are not alien to us, but the man who takes the wrong side on the momentous subject of the Hebrew points must be treated as the enemy of his race. There was the same sort of antithetic mixture in Martin Poyser. He was of so excellent a disposition, that he had been kinder and more respectful than ever to his old father, since he had made a deed of gift of all his property, and no man judged his neighbors more charitably on all personal matters. But for a farmer, like Luke Britton, for example, whose fallows were not well cleaned, who didn't know the rudiments of hedging and ditching, and showed but a small share of judgment in the purchase of winter stock, Martin Poyser was as hard and implacable as the northeast wind. Luke Britton could not make a remark, even on the weather, but Martin Poyser detected in it a taint of that unsoundness and general ignorance which was palpable in all his farming operations. He hated to see the fellow lift the pewter pint to his mouth in the bar of the Royal George on market day, and the mere sight of him on the other side of the road, brought a severe and critical expression into his black eyes, as different as possible from the fatherly glance he bent on his two nieces as they approached the door. Mr. Poyser had smoked his evening pipe, and now held his hands in his pockets, as the only resource of a man who continues to sit up after the day's business is done. "Why, lasses, ye're rather late tonight," he said, when they reached the little gate leading into the causeway. "Ye mother's begun to fidget about you, and she's got the little un ill. And how did you leave the old woman bead, Dinah? Is she much down about the old man? He'd been but a poor bargain to her this 5 year. She's been greatly distressed for the loss of him," said Dinah, "but she seemed more comforted today. Her son Adam's been at home all day, working at his father's coffin, and she loves to have him at home. She's been talking about him to me almost all the day. S. He has a loving heart, though she's sorely given to fret and be fearful. I wish S. He had a sure trust to comfort her in her old age." "Adam's sure enough," said Mr. Poyser, misunderstanding Dinah's wish. "Here's no fear, but he'll yield well I the threshing. He's not one o' them as is all straw and no grain. I'll be bound for him any day, as he'll be a good son to the last. Did he say he'd be coming to see us soon? But come in," he added, making way for them. "I hadn't need keep you out any longer." The tall buildings round the yard shut out a good deal of the sky, but the large window let in abundant light to show every corner of the house place. Mrs. Poyser, seated in the rocking chair, which had been brought out of the right-hand parlor, was trying to soothe Toddy to sleep. But Toddy was not disposed to sleep, and when her cousins entered, she raised herself up, and showed a pair of flushed cheeks, which looked fatter than ever now they were defined by the edge of her linen nightcap. In the large wicker-bottomed armchair in the left-hand chimney nook sat old Martin Poyser, a hale but shrunken and bleached image of his portly black-haired son, his head hanging forward a little, and his elbows pushed backwards so as to allow the whole of his forearm to rest on the arm of the chair. His blue handkerchief was spread over his knees, as was usual indoors, when it was not hanging over his head, and he sat watching what went forward with the quiet outward glance of healthy old age, which, disengaged from any interest in an inward drama, spies out pins upon the floor, follows one's minute's motions with an unexpectant, purposeless tenacity, watches the flickering of the flame, or the sun gleams on the wall, counts the quarries on the floor, watches even the hand of the clock, and pleases itself with detecting a rhythm in the tick. "What a time o' night this is to come home, Petty," said Mrs. Poyser. "Look at the clock, do. Why, it's going on for 9:30, and I've sent the gels to bed this half hour, and late enough too, when they've got to get up at 4:30, and the mower's bottles to fill, and the baking. And here's this blessed child why the fever for what I know, and as wakeful as if it was dinner time, and nobody to help me to give her the physic but your uncle, and fine work there's been, and half of it spilt on her nightgown. It's well if she swallowed more, nor I'll make her worse is to know better. But folks as have no mind, to be o' use have a lays the luck, to be out o' the road, when there's anything to be done. I did set out before 8, and," said Hetty, in a pettish tone, with a slight toss of her head. "But this clock's so much before the clock at the Chase, there's no telling what time it'll be when I get here." "What? You'd be wanting the clock set by gentle folks' time, would you? And sit up burning candle, and lie a bed while the sun a-baking you like a cowcomber I the frame? The clock hasn't been put forward for the first time today, I reckon." The fact was, Hetty had really forgotten the difference of the clocks, when she told Captain Donathan that she set out at 8, and this, with her lingering pace, had made her nearly half an hour later than usual. But here her aunt's attention was diverted from this tender subject by Toddy, who, perceiving at length that the arrival of her cousins was not likely to bring anything satisfactory to her in particular, began to cry, "Money, money," in an explosive manner. "Well then, my pet, mother's got her, mother won't leave her. toddy be a good dilling, and go to sleep now, said Mrs. Poyser, leaning back and rocking the chair, while she tried to make Toddy nestle against her. But Toddy only cried louder, and said, don't yock. So the mother, with that wondrous patience which love gives to the quickest temperament, sat up again, and pressed her cheek against the linen nightcap and kissed it, and forgot to scold Teddy any longer. Come, Teddy, said Martin Poyser, in a conciliatory tone, go and get your supper i' the pantry, as the things are all put away, and then you can come, and take the little un while your aunt undresses herself, for she won't lie down in bed without her mother. And I reckon you could eat a bit, Dinah, for they don't keep much of a house down there. No, thank you, Uncle, said Dinah. I ate a good meal before I came away, for Mrs. Bede would make a kettle cake for me. I don't want any supper, said Teddy, taking off her hat. Can hold Toddy now, if Aunt wants me. Why, what nonsense that is to talk, said Mrs. Poyser. Oh, you think you can live without eating, and nourish your inside while sticking red ribbons on your head? Go and get your supper this minute, child. There's a nice bit o' cold pudding i' the safe, just what you're fond of. Teddy complied silently by going towards the pantry, and Mrs. Poyser went on speaking to Dinah. Sit down, my dear, and look as if you knowed what it was to make yourself a bit comfortable i' the world. I warrant the old woman was glad to see you, since you stayed so long. She seemed to like having me there at last, but her sons say she doesn't like young women about her commonly, and I thought just at first she was almost angry with me for going. Eh, it's a poor lookout when th old folks teasing like the young uns, said old Martin, bending his head down lower, and seeming to trace the pattern of the quarries with his eye. Aye, it's ill living in a hen roost for them as doesn't like fleas, said Mrs. Poyser. E of all had our turn at being young, I reckon, bet good luck or ill. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.